This is HPR episode 2521 entitled HPR Community News for March 2018 and is part of the series HPR Community News. It is hosted by HPR volunteers and is about 65 minutes long and carries an explicit flag. The summary is HPR volunteers talk about shows released and comments posted in March 2018.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by archive.org. Support universal access to all knowledge by heading over to archive.org/donate.
Hi everybody, my name is Ken Fallon and welcome to another edition of Hacker Public Radio Community News for March 2018, where HPR volunteers talk about shows released and commented posted in March 2018. Joining me tonight is...
Hello, Dave Morris here again. Always bad penny, always turning up.
Glad to have you, Dave. And would you like to just to tell people what this show is about? Is Hacker Public Radio is a community podcast where you, the listener, can submit shows to be heard by other members of the community. And we're doing this show slightly earlier because I've had a very busy weekend and Dave has kindly agreed 2 hours earlier, which is fantastic. Sorry for everybody who wanted to join the show, but there you go.
Yes, I think David Whitman said something to the effect that he's always wanted to join us on one of these. I hope this isn't the one where he's trying to join in.
And do you want to welcome our new hosts?
Yes, we have one new host this month, and it is the Remora, which is a pretty great name, I think.
Excellent.
Remora is a type of fish, because I've got a biological background, but it's a good name for a person or for a fish.
Anyway, thought it was a character in a movie. We shall have to investigate later on, I guess.
Well, yeah. My biological head says it's one of those fish that you find attached to the underside of sharks.
Ah, but, very good.
It's got a strange sucker thing on the top of its head that it can stick to other fish. And divers as well, apparently. So, yeah, cool. But it probably is a movie character as well, for all I know. I don't know.
Okay. Our first show... was by Mr. X tuning around the high frequency 40 meter band. In this episode, I give an example of what sort of things you can expect to hear on the HF band. And this is a show that I've been requesting for some time. And I found it fascinating. Yeah.
Yes, yes. Some great notes, actually. I enjoyed that. The only thing is a little bit more in the way of explanation might have helped me anyway. Probably you were way ahead of everybody.
Not at all. I had no clue what was going on. But I thought it was more a soundscape episode than anything else. It's just nice to hear.
Yeah, it was cool. It was very cool. There was a comment on this one, I think, wasn't there?
Yeah, go for it.
Scroll. Yes, Michael says, great show. I love the idea of tuning around and simply demonstrating what you can hear. However, I would suggest to add a bit more commentary to make it more meaningful to those who do not already know what they're listening to. Let me add that the Morse code, CW signal, in both cases was a French station, F5IN, calling a CQDX, a general call for faraway stations. In the first bit, and just finishing a transmission in a contact in the second one. When Tom, DF2BO, described his antenna setup, this left me mouth gaping. Yagi's, is it? Two elements on 80 meter, 35 megahertz, and three elements on 40 meter, 7 megahertz. These are monsters, way beyond what any normal amateur will be able to put up. Just an amazing configuration that almost makes me drool when thinking about. This is the kind of background information that makes sense to add to put the audio in context. Regards, Michael.
And Mr. X replied, saying, hi, Michael, many thanks for the comments. Glad you enjoyed the show, and you're probably correct that a bit of commentary might have been a good idea. There were a couple of reasons why I chose not to add any commentary first. It made the podcast easier to make. But the real reason was that I was trying to create a bit of the mystery for people who had never heard the strange sounds you find when tuning around the amateur radio HF band, which I thought might be the case for a large portion of the audience. When I was a young boy, I remember listening to old Second World War valve receivers that I occasionally had access to and was fascinated by the strange sounds of voices, having no idea what I was listening to. I thought initially giving no explanation would create more intrigue for those who had never heard HF before. And if there were interest that gripped them, then they could look at some show notes. I'd probably add some commentary next time I do it. P.S. Many thanks for deciphering the Morse code to CW. And yes, that was an incredible setup of the DF2BO HAD. Certainly beats my half-wave dipole flung in the loft. Absolutely awesome. I remember the reason I am so intrigued by amateur radio is for this very reason, that while studying at night, I had a shortwave radio receiver and would hear, tune around and hear the Morse code and, Radio Peace and Harmony from the Soviet bloc at the time. So...
Yes, I certainly did that too. I had a valve radio with shortwave on it and used to listen to a lot of stuff, just sort of searching up and down the bands, trying to find interesting things to listen to. Don't remember much, but what I heard though.
Yeah, exactly. I always wanted to know what the Morse code, what exactly they were saying. Of course, now you could probably just hook up a device that will translate it for you, but that kind of is cheating, I think.
Yes.
Anyway, the following day we had a hookah with his podcast recommendations. This is, the third in the series. Some nice shows in here. Quite a lot of them, these I'm already subscribed to as well.
Yeah, me too.
And Steve said, how in the world? My question is, how many hours a day do you spend listening to podcasts? And are there many hours in the day? And are there that many hours in the day? Thanks for the episodes. Quite a list.
Well, yeah. I think Hooker's possibly doing what I do and just having headphones on all day long, listening.
Yeah, exactly. And probably speeding them up a bit as well.
I know he does that. Yeah. He's mentioned that in the past.
So the community news show we had, I posted two comments, one with the link to the book, my wife's book, and the other, and she's decided to write the second book in Dutch before doing the translation, but I can't influence her in any way. I've given up trying. And the other comment is that the pipe character can be escaped using the ampersand octothorpe space 124 semicolon. That note was more to myself.
Yes. Oh, it works. Yes, I was impressed. There was no space after the hash or octothorpe, mind you. Yes.
Yeah, all of those. I had to put them in, otherwise they would escape it.
Yeah, otherwise it would just made just a pipe symbol, yeah. Yes.
Oh, God. Yeah.
Clinton Roy had a comment where he said, thank you, tricky bastards, he said.
No idea what he's on about.
Not a clue what that was about.
Must be middle of the summer, getting too much sun down there in Australia, I reckon.
The flies.
Clacky says, re-flea market, or a yard sale, or a garage sale, and maybe that video from, if you go to YouTube, it's MC Frontalot stoop sale. Did you happen to listen to that?
I didn't. I completely forgot.
I warn anybody who listens to that video, it will get into your head and you'll be going around singing it for a week. Stew sale. I'm in Brooklyn. Where I come from.
I must do that. That sounds like fun.
No.
I'm always prepared to extend my knowledge of things. Yeah. It's strange how there's so many names for the same thing.
Yeah. Pretty cool. And the following day... which would have been a Tuesday, I guess. Volume of Thought by Lost in Bronx, attempt to measure how the volume of his own thoughts. And basically he figures that unwanted music is minus 30 dB and then his trail of thought starts to derail. I actually need to do this. It's an interesting concept.
Yeah, it's also the type of music, though, isn't it? I mean, I can listen to, well, I don't know. I've not done, he's obviously thought this through quite carefully and experimented. So, but certain types of music distract me at whatever level.
Yeah. And I would have said as well, I get distracted by beeps and peeps and phone ringing and, you know, people not answering the phone and, you know, that bongs from incoming messages on WhatsApp and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah, it's
just, anyway, Wendigo had a comment. Do you want to read it or shall I?
Yep. Two comments, says Wendigo. Firstly, after hearing the title of this episode, I thought you were going to be discussing how much three-dimensional space your thoughts took up. That's not something I've ever considered before. That's a nice comment. Secondly, when you actually discussed the loudness of your own thoughts and what types of sounds successfully caused you to lose track of them, it was also something I'd never considered. Well done, sir. Well done.
There we go. Now a whole scientific branch will open up as a result of this.
Yeah. There's, I can think of some experiments you could do in a psychology lab, you know.
So the following day, we had Dave the Lovebug telling us about his 10-year journey into podcasting, which was extremely interesting.
Yeah, he's
strange how things have come along and how... Yeah, he's very busy. He does a lot of podcasting, does Dave?
He's certainly done. He's had a long history of doing this type of stuff, hasn't he?
Yeah.
And he's achieved a very professional style quality to it all. Even though he doesn't make his money that way, but it's a very high quality stuff.
Indeed. Clinton Roy says, "Wow, what a great story! I'm not into music podcasts at all, though. Can't speed them up, Smiley. But this was a fascinating look behind the scenes of a professional." Yes. And I think professional would be an appropriate term.
Yeah. Dave replies, re-wow, he says, "Thanks, Clinton. I'm really glad you enjoyed the episode. The last 10 years have really been a blast, and I can see many more podcasting years ahead. I've had a few people call me professional, and whilst that isn't strictly true, I'd be lying if I said I wouldn't want to be."
Yeah, cool. And the following day, an intro to Git with pen and paper. And this actually, Tlatu introduces Git using pen and paper. And this actually made me rebooting speech sense. Right. You know, a professional would actually cut that out, but I'm not going to bother. An intro to Git with pen and paper. This actually made me, I have one of these items that I need to recommend a good course to people, ideally for free in work. And this is something I've recommended to them simply because it explains very, very eloquently what Git is all about. Brilliant.
Yes.
Really, for once, yes. Burnt it in my head what Git is all about.
Yes. And there's the voice of experience there. You can tell Clatu's worked in collaborative environments and stuff where a good knowledge of this is important for him and his colleagues and so on and so forth. So, you know, I tend to use Git just locally a lot of the time. So it's a really useful insight for me as well. So, yeah, excellent.
So The Power of GNU Readline Part 3 by Dave. This is now a series, I see. Software library that provides line editing, blah, 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 blah. Yes.
It is
actually very... who'd have thought, Dave? Who'd have thought we could have got a series out of this?
Well, I was surprised myself, to be honest. And I started off, I thought I'd maybe get one show out of it, but it's definitely going to be another one at very least. I was having a chat with my son about this because he's given me a keyboard which has got an AT Mega in it, which is programmable. But I was saying to him, well, what would you actually program into it? And really, you could do things like add key sequences to switch media on and off or something like that. But when you look at what Readline can do, you wouldn't really bother. You know, so it's...
you got Daddy a shitty present.
No, he agreed.
Why didn't you just get me socks like everybody else?
No, he had a wonderful time. It's an old IBM Model M
keyboard. Oh, don't get me started on those horrible, horrible things.
I had it in the attic, and he said, "Oh, can I have that?" And I said, "Yeah." And then I got it back again with it all completely refurbished and a a programmable doodad in it, and you can put different software into it, and you can add macros and things to it, and so on.
Back to Lost in Bronx's show, when with those keyboards, my decibel level is 0, if not positive 10. I can hear them a mile off.
I wouldn't actually use this with anybody else in the house, though. My daughter's here just briefly, but she has headphones in all the time, so she knows she's not bothered by it. But I think anybody else in the house would be slapping me in the back of the head.
Who was it hold on 1 second. Door to Door Geek has one of these, yes. Door to Door Geek has one of these, and he was saying, mm-hmm. yes, when he starts typing away, all the desks around him become vacant. So maybe that is a reason to get one.
Yeah. I could imagine that.
Anyway, Jan says, some lines of support. Hi, Dave. Thanks a lot for your effort. If a machine is under heavy load and therefore kind of not responsive anymore, that read line magic comes in handy. Same goes for slow links between user terminals and remote machines.
Oh, good point. And Clinton Roy says, current command. I was not aware of the comment command, he says. Can't read today. I was not aware that the comment/decomment commands, they might be useful. I'm making a right pig's ear of this, I'm afraid. I was not aware of. Yeah, anyway.
It's nothing wrong with the sentence. It's all in the person who's reading it.
The read line in my head is broken, I'm afraid.
And for anyone worried that I'm going to slag off your show, don't. Dave is one of the most professional podcasters out there, but even the best of them fumble sometimes. Okay, Clacky says, a big long thing, so brace yourself, everyone. Surprisingly useful. I went in thinking, blah, read line, it's like C, control, or control A, control E, some kill and yank, what's to learn? But it was Dave, and somehow there was a three-parter, so maybe there's something useful in there. Wow, I was so wrong about knowing everything there was to know about read line. I didn't know how useful the capitalization things are. Control T, I'd already knew about, but I think the most useful for when you have pressed Control C by mistake, but MB, Meta B and Meta F. Oh my God, which two are those, Dave? Quickly.
You don't expect me to remember them. No, it's backwards and forwards by word.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. I have needed these for years. I usually hop around with Control Left, Control Right, but when you're one mosh, one tmux and one sudo down, usually all the arrow key codes have gone and it's all misery. Now with Meta B and Meta F, my life quality has drastically improved. Actually, I might burn those two into my memory. Anyway, back to his comment. Also interesting to know that the args thing is for. I've been vaguely aware of it as it's easy to trigger by mistake, but I think I will use it more now that I've been taught what exactly it does. Maybe for counting the length of a git commit message, for example. You want to know, you want a 60 character max commit length, meta 6 space 0 space control B. After you type the message, we'll show you how much you overran that limit.
Yeah, good point.
Thanks, Dave. As always, a great contribution, even for those of us who may think we already know everything. Well, that's awesome.
That's a lovely comment.
Isn't it just?
So I said thanks to everybody. Thanks to Jan, Clinton Roy, and Clacky. Glad you're finding the series useful. I had known of Readline's existence for years, and there were some features that might be useful, but I'd never spent the time to find out what it could do. I'm most surprised at the amount of work that's gone into this library and the great features it offers. I expect to be able to get another couple of shows from it before I'm finished, and there's scope for others to contribute too if they work out cool things to do with it.
Fantastic. Okay. The following day, we had Build Your Own Lisp, a book review. Learn C programming while building a Lisp. And for those who don't know, Lisp is a programming language with long history and a distinctive full syntaxed prefix notation originally specified in 1958. Lisp is the second oldest high-level programming language in widespread use today. That I didn't know. This was an interesting show.
This is fascinating. Yes. I oddly, there was a guy I knew when I was a student in Manchester who is a computer scientist who was building a Lisp, writing it using Algol on the mainframe there, and I just couldn't understand why he would want to do that. But after thinking about it, it's quite an impressive feat, and I'm fascinated to read more into this one actually when I get some time.
Very niche, but also cool. It's also cool to start off with something that you're interested in and follow it through that way of thinking.
Good. Yeah, it comes from the computer science department at Edinburgh University. So
it's got to be good, yeah.
Pass it to my son because he wants to go and do a degree there if he can. So
cool. The following day, this, I don't know, was this a Soundscape one or was it a functioning programming or a package? But it's all in one. Waste of shows there, Clacky. Where he was walking through a market and talking about functional programming. He had me worried there for a minute with copyrighted music in the background. Oh dear, my heart skipped a beat. So, Racket to Linux, has he now is working full time on this? Is that correct?
Yeah, that's what I understood anyway. So yeah, he's
living the dream.
Yeah, absolutely. I must admit that it went 90% over my head, but it sounds very cool.
And I was in the stratosphere a little bit above you, to be honest, or actually below, looking up at you. Because I kind of got what he was saying, but I have not needed this niche as yet. But no doubt we will come across somebody who will say, yes, I know somebody who's done a whole series of shows on that. Cool. The next one was also a throw off by Lost in Bronx, the comment.
It's a bit of a
we're gonna do it. Exactly. Typo. Larger than I thought with an asterisk.
Yes. And then I said, because I try and look for these things when I'm processing the notes, and I think these were, can't remember if they were HTML probably.
I'm also surprised that you haven't sent me a thought thingy explanation like you did with wither, weather, and wither. Actually, you need to do a show of all of those together and just put them on one as an episode out. Just
well, I started to think about an episode where because I see people writing then and than, mixing them up and putting apostrophes before s's where they're not needed and all that stuff. And I'm just afraid I'm going to turn into a monster, you know, a grammarian monster that will bear down on everybody and kick them. I already nag my kids and
you're allowed to.
So yeah, I have something sort of started, but I've been wary of becoming that hated person that points out everybody's mistakes. But anyway, this dialogue was really Clackett pointing out a problem where he thought that simply putting it in the comments would be sufficient. And I took that to be a request to change it. So I changed it, which then made him come back and go, ah, right. I thought it would have been enough to just leave it like that. But you went and changed it. So that means my comments now are redundant, blah, blah, blah. So,
of course. This is Dave, people.
So there were three comments there to no great avail, otherwise to have an interesting chat about it. So I'll maybe skip over the contents and leave it at that.
Like you said, you got word from Stuart with the link, and Fractalina has an account that I misspoke on something. A node won't have an info.rkt. It's one fractal, one package, and the nodes are pointing out internally within that package. For more on what all this means, what a fractal is, more and more, look forward to an interview with Stuart whenever we get that in order. Pretty cool. And then Clacky's responding with a correction to you, saying that, a correction to the correction. No, I didn't misspeak anything. I just misunderstood each other. Sorry for the... Okay, fine.
So yeah, chapter of accidents, I think, is the term that you use. But still interesting.
So false prophets, which cult personalities may affect space exploration. I was not expecting this to go the way it went, but it was pretty good. And the comments were interesting. Do you want to read the first one?
Yes, it's quite a long one.
That's why I'm having you read it.
Clackis says, you are right to worry, but Musk isn't the only one. He's the one who got the furthest and has the grandest master plan. But don't forget about Bezos and Branson and their space venture. So I don't think we're pinning our hopes on one man, but my answer reveals something else. We're still pinning our hopes on great men, as in the great men theory of history. Musk, Bezos, and Branson aren't geniuses in the sense that they are sciencing and engineering all this stuff when nobody else could. They're just hiring the people who do. Still, I think people fawning over Musk is awesome because it means people are pinning their hopes on research, engineering, entrepreneurship, because that's what he symbolizes. And hustling the money and funneling it in the right direction isn't nothing either. It's far better than people admiring people who literally don't contribute anything or who are contributing negatively to furthering the knowledge and power of the human race, like David Avocado Wolf, Dr. Oz, or Gwyneth Paltrow. Okay, so we're not at the mercy of a single man, but we are at the mercy of three men. No, don't forget about China and India and old space travelers, Japan and ESA, and even Russia. They're also further into space than Bezos and or Branson, and on some axes further than Musk. I'm not overly worried. Humanity will get our eggs in a second basket before the century is over. That's a great comment.
Yeah, unfortunately, there was too many mans in that for my liking. But it does reflect the fact that there are... Yeah, it does reflect the hashtag Me Too thing, I guess. That the majority of billionaires are men.
Oh, I'm afraid so, yes. There's not a lot we can do about that at this stage in the game.
And also, even Russia comment. In fairness, Russia have been carrying the space program for the last 10 to 15 years, guys. So they have... Who is supplying the International Space Station? So yes, I know there are those. But anyway, Lost in Bronx says, I agree with you, but I think China is our biggest chance of competition in the long run, but they aren't moving quickly. That may change. I hope it does. I also believe that the commercialization of space is the only real future it can possibly have. If people can't at least hope for a better life out there, they won't bother. China may be a big player here too, since it has no problem sponsoring large-scale commercial ventures. Looking at from that point of view, though, business people like Musk and others may turn out to be our last best chance for humanity after all. Surely, I sure wouldn't mind being wrong. Now, with that said, there was a very interesting discussion from Wendover Productions about this very thing. And while the first part is a bit of a company sponsorship video, the latter half goes into exactly this, long-term goals and why governments need to get involved. So that's worth a watch. I would like to also comment as well that the China space race, China space program has been very slow, but it's been incredibly meticulous, and that the goals that are set seem to be set with a achievable project deadline in place. And so far, they seem to be meeting their goals, so I wouldn't rule them out either as a means to get to space.
Yes. I'm not sure which is most important at the moment, whether it's getting people into space. I mean, that was the point of this discussion, indeed, really, wasn't it? Or whether it's also, you know, doing space science, like there are plans to go to the possible life-bearing moons of Jupiter and stuff.
I think Lost in Bronx goal is to get us at least some of us off the planet, so that there is a chance that the human race itself will continue. Because don't forget, folks, we are on a spaceship. We are traveling through space right now. And yeah, I really think if everybody viewed the world like this, we might go a little bit easier on it.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. That's partly one of the criteria that should be part of this discussion, that to be rushing off the planet, or and I don't actually mean that, but if that's the priority over making sure that the existing terraformed place that we already have is worth looking after rather than rushing off to terraform somewhere else, the balance needs to be looked at quite carefully.
Yeah, I think we need to do both. It's very simple. We need to do both. The following day was audiobook 16, Matcher's Rules, and I downloaded this and then realized that I had actually read, in air quotes, it before. And God, Pokey didn't like this one. Oh dear.
Yeah.
And 5150 didn't quite get the whole concept of non-spoilers before the spoiler bit.
Yeah.
It didn't. I had to laugh.
The picture they painted wasn't a particularly attractive one. The note I made to myself was, maybe give this one a miss.
Actually, I really, really enjoyed this book when it came out. I really did. I was bugged by some of the things, like the light, the glow sticks, and the control thing that Pokey was on about, but I left it off because it was such an interesting world that was built. It was a nice, comfortable world. It was a comfortable read. So yeah.
Okay. Well, I'll maybe give it a shot. My queue of books at the moment is quite long, but it's worth
leave it on there. I wouldn't rush out to read it, but it's it's not. Yes, everything Pokey says is correct, but it was still it's still past the time in my opinion. Clinton Roy says, interesting. This was an interesting discussion, maybe because of the disagreements. Also, thank you for the audio notes, which is cool.
Yeah. Some good notes.
Yeah, I did. I liked the discussion on this one, especially when I didn't, had listened to it and had my own opinions of it as well.
Yeah, the thing that I miss out with is I've not listened to these things. I mean, the original idea was that you get a chance to listen before you heard the show, yeah. And that sort of the timings all got messed up, unfortunately. But yeah, I think I might have appreciated it more if I'd heard it. But still, good series. I'm enjoying it
very much. The following day, we had Privacy and Security by Ahuka explaining the Diffie-Hellman-Merkle key exchange, and it was nice that he took the time out to credit Merkle there as well, and did a very good job at explaining how this works in audio.
Yeah. This was excellent. It sort of passed me by a little bit, but it's the thing with podcasts, isn't it? It's really something that's complex. It's hard to absorb when you're doing the washing up or whatever else, you're cleaning the cat's tray or something. But not both at the same time. I just realized what I'd said. It was. Oh, it's very cool.
Picture of a cat now in the dishwasher as well.
I
and
did
the local
go
number
looking
of the Scottish RSPCA is.
Oh dear, scrub that cat again. But Kevin's website is an excellent source of further reading.
Yeah.
That's really important to note, because I tend not to do that as much as I should, and I did go looking at this one, and I'm going to come back to it, and it's excellent. And the maths was interesting because I just sort of caught the edge of what he was talking about, and it's just what my son's been doing in his maths course just now. He's trying to do a course to prepare him for doing a computer science degree, and he was doing modulo stuff just at the moment. I'm sure he could put it better than I can, but still, so relevant, all important.
Yeah, and there's an excellent Khan Academy video that describes the mechanics of that, using a clock and a piece of rope that you wind around the clock to get the numbers, and also they use mixing two colors of paint. So you pick a color, and then you mix your secret color with the shared color from the other side, and by mixing them together, it's easy to mix them together, but it's very difficult to unmix them. So that was the analogies he used. If you have benefit of sight, checking the Khan Academy videos for that is probably a good thing.
Yeah, that's a good hint. Thank you.
And a response to episode 2496 be easy going even one more up on my list of cool people who are doing stuff I asked them to do, basically responding with shows to shows. And this was the Pi identification script, something that I need to run on the network urgently, Dave, urgently.
Yes, yes. It he did point out a deficiency in it, which I hadn't really thought about. It was one of those scripts that you write and you think, oh, that's great, it works, it does the thing. Yeah. And then you think, oh, somebody else might like it. And you don't completely think the thing through and say, but what if? I usually do that, but I didn't in this case. So it was good to...
That's good. The whole point of shared collaboration. What you wanted to do, and if it can be extended to do something else by somebody else, then pretty cool. So
I shall update my GitHub copy at some point in the near future. Yep. But the way that Beezy was using it was brilliant. I really enjoyed listening to what he was doing. So very cool.
And armed with our knowledge of how Git works with post-it notes, Klaatu extends his series on Introduction to Git, where he is describing remotes and origins and all that sort of stuff. Very good, Git remote. And it became a lot clearer to me what the word origin is and what a remote is and local is. So I'm not saying that I'm getting it entirely, which I should because I do this stuff every day, but at the same time, like with everything else, you know a few commands and then you just repeat them over and over again and hoping that it won't break.
Well, quite. Yeah. It's a bit like using Vim or something like that. You know enough to survive with it, but not enough to be clever with
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
So this, the note I made to myself was go over this again with a bit of paper and make some notes.
Yeah, exactly.
So yes. I need notes. I need things written down on a bit of paper. So it's the only way. Writing makes it go in my head. Otherwise, it doesn't go in very well.
So the following day, we had why I choose Aperture first. And this is David Whitman encourages you to choose Aperture as the most important setting in your camera. And yes, still haven't had a show about the dogs, Dave. Have you noticed?
He did give us access to all these
pictures. I think
he's
teasing us now. He's teasing us with it.
I did have a quick look at one of the... Well, it's not possible to have a quick look because
no, that's true.
Each thing is about 2 gigabytes of photos and stuff. But I did have a peek at some of them and some magnificent dogs there which I'd like to know more about. But this is good. More camera stuff would be very, very good, I think.
Again, that's another,
this sort of thing.
Another thing. I don't have a camera at all now. The camera I had, I tried to fix it and it's now in the... fix me box, very soon going into the hack me box.
I have several actually, but some of them are my son's leftovers because he says, I don't really like this around here much. Do you want it? I say, oh, okay then. And Micro Four Thirds and things like that. But the same argument applies to these. I imagine David's got some pretty impressive cameras, but just the little portable point and click ones you can still get quite sophisticated with.
Yeah. Question though, why don't we have more camera stuff on this network?
I don't know. Strange. I don't know. It's a lot of science involved in it, and you'd have thought this would be a great community to be getting more into this. But
yes, but like the ham radio, until you ask people for it and bug them enough, they don't think that it's something of interest to hackers, and yet it is.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I would certainly vote for more.
Absolutely. The following day, we had electronic calculator kit. In my bill, talks about building a $16 electronic calculator kit, which is now part of the new Hobby Electronics series. Which is kind of cool.
Yes. Yeah. Good.
You went mad this month on the series, making series two.
Well, it's there was a bunch of series that needed to be made, I think. So
indeed. So the love bug said, blind faith. I haven't even listened to the episode yet, but I've just ordered myself one of these calculator kits from Amazon.
MI Bill says, enjoy the kit, Dave. I warn about a few small pitfalls I ran into while building it. Hope it saves you the same trouble.
And the Lovebug says, done and dusted. Bought it, built it. Surprisingly straightforward, thanks to A, to have your advice, Bill, and B, the links you couldn't get to worked fine for me. and they had a pretty detailed picture guide. It's a bit clicky, says my wife, so all the more reason to use it. Oh, that's not nice. And here's a PG-13 of the calculator in action. And he says, I managed to break my GMG instance without even knowing about it. My next project, perhaps. What's a GMG?
I have no idea. I don't know what he's talking about, I'm afraid.
Green Man Gamer? Green Mountain Gills?
I don't know. But it's...
Global Mediation Group? Bangladeshi Airline? I don't know.
It's the picture's good, though. He made it say an interesting number. So yeah, it looks really cool actually. Not a thing I would buy for myself. But in the next room, hidden in a drawer, is one which I was going to give to my son just to amuse him. It's his birthday next week, and he's of an age where he doesn't want things for his birthday. And I thought I'll just buy it for him and see whether he'll probably make it in about 10 minutes because he's pretty good with this. Though the case build looks a bit fiddly. But very cool. It looks quite useful. Not just a calculator, but it can also do stuff with the color codes on.
That's how it seemed like on the stuff. Reason that, itself that's, together. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, it looks like it's going to be fun.
So the New Year's Eve show part two. Listen to it. It was cool. It was weird, relaxed, laid back sort of thing.
It was good. I enjoyed. I'm enjoying these more this year more than I have in the past, to be honest with you. It was good. There were some good topics.
See how many shows CM Hobbs promised me.
yeah. Waiting with bated breath for those. Absolutely. Yeah,
I advise him to stop doing physical penetration testing in the States. That doesn't sound like a lot of fun.
No, it doesn't.
Or
it doesn't
far too much fun.
Gerald heard me talking on this. Gerald comes from Staines in the UK, which is not far from where I was born. In Staines is in Middlesex, I believe. So he heard somebody with a sort of bit of a London accent sort of thing. Except I've got about 20 different accents now because I've moved around the country, and there's one every 10 minutes as you move around this country. So
yeah, it's true.
Anyway, so he didn't actually appear on the recording though. I was expecting to hear him speaking.
Oh,
anyway,
right.
Thank you, Gerald. Anyway,
Clacky, Markdown show notes. Ken, Tlatu and Ken were discussing the merits on Markdown and the horribleness of multitudes of Markdown flavors. Here's what I do from my show notes. I write on hashify.me, Markdown on the left, live rendered text on the right, so you can easily click control links to check them. When I mark text on the right, right click, choose view selection source in Firefox, it opens up a new tab where the source is almost correctly marked, and I'm putting the emphasis on almost myself. I mark it, copy then paste, and the show notes text box in 5 as the text type.
Sounds eminently sensible.
Yes, except it's got div tags in there, Clacky. Yes, it does, and you send them to us, and then we need to purge them! Purge the div tags, Clacky!
I didn't say I never noticed. Mind you, the method I use can produce div tags. I try not to do it.
That. Yeah.
But, anyways, yes.
Don't get me started on div tags. Anyway, introduction to Git branching. Oh yeah, another Tlatu one, and good actually, very good. It makes sense, especially some of the comments people have made to me, going, "You do realize that you just merged to master from the dev thing?" Okay, thank you very much. That was bad then, was it?
yeah. Well, as I said earlier on, I use Git in a similar way to the way you use RCS, which was the thing we all used back in the day. and that was like a single user type thing. And I'm still doing something like that with Git, though it is shared, obviously. But what Glatu is saying here is effectively telling me how to use it properly, which is brilliant.
It's kind of the whole point of this series, actually.
Well, quite, yes. And yes. But how do you know that you're using it improperly until somebody starts pointing these things out?
I think you can figure that out if you're using If you're using the command you found on some website somewhere and you have no clue what it's doing, then you're probably using it incorrectly.
If you're working with a team and the team are going, right. No, don't do that, then you're using it properly. Yes, I'm not really doing that yet to any great extent, but there's still some important lessons to be learned here.
And Mike Ray says, great podcast. I've been using Git for a few years now, but there is something new even for a seasoned Git user in this series. It's a subject that needed clarity because a lot of stuff, a lot of the online stuff about Git is complex and confusing. More, please, and more about the kind of DevOps related stuff and more server config and admin. Couldn't agree more, Mike. Well done. Keep it coming, Klaatu.
Yeah, nicely said.
An operator is producing some very nice shows lately. This one was on a DIY CCTV security using, I think, internet power over IP security cameras, power over Ethernet cameras, and, you know, basically a hodgepodge of stuff to give him a lot of control over what he can do. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. Impressive setup he's got there. Really. Absolutely. Quite something. Yeah. And
nice videos as well to go along with it.
Yeah, I haven't looked. It's been a busy month for me, so I'm not following that one up. But I will. They look really cool.
You did need a beefy PC to be able to do this, though.
Yeah, that's the trouble, isn't it? It's I've been tempted to do this. I know other people who've got into this. There's people in the local LUG that have given talks on doing this, but it's. I don't have a tremendous need. I do have a Raspberry Pi Zero with a camera attached to it that's stuck to a window here. But
yeah, that might do.
Exactly. It's just taking quarter-hourly snapshots at the moment, so see the way the weather's going and things. There's a device you can buy from one of the British companies called the Pi Hut, onto which you can mount a Pi Zero with a camera, and then it's got two suction cups you can stick to the inside of a window.
Yeah, I've seen that in the Pi magazine.
Yeah, so I've got one of those, and it's 0W, so it sends me pictures wirelessly every 15 minutes. But it's not like this. This is something that's got motion detection.
Oh, it's full Monty, yeah.
And then you know, taking videos and stuff.
Yeah.
So interesting area to be working in.
Soulminder is a pretty cool thing. I've set it up once, but again, my need is not that great. Basically, I don't have any crap worth stealing, so there you go. What? No iPads here. Some old Raspberry Pi A's if you want them.
yeah, same here, really. And the neighborhood watch is pretty good.
Yep.
We're also tightly packed together in these Edinburgh estates, so everybody can see what everybody else is doing anyway.
And the following day we had Steve Sainer with converting my laptop to dual boot. And this was an excellent one because it built on a previous episode by Mongo, episode 2305. And yeah, you know, I was thinking about this. I was thinking this is brilliant. You know, if you ever do need to go and put Windows back on a PC and how you can basically go about it. And then I realized Autodesk Fusion 360, that is becoming such an important piece of software. And we don't have something in the free and open source community to tackle it, you know. And I think we're always behind the game. You know, there's always going to be, we get a top quality video editor. You know, there's a, people say, oh, I can't move to Windows. I have to stay on Windows because of Photoshop. And then eventually the GIMP is good enough to do, to, you know, compensate for that. And then they go, oh, I can't move because of video editing. And then we go, well, you know, you got Keaton Live and you got Blender. What more do you want? And then there's always something else. There's always something else coming up that isn't available. And it just gets a bit tiring after 20 years of it. When will there ever be a day where, you know, this is it? You don't need Windows to run stuff.
Well, absolutely. Absolutely. I've just been having that conversation with people that I think I said I really fancy getting into 3D printing, but I wanted to have a totally Linux solution to it. And basically, I'm on a loser. It's not going to be. Because if I want to actually design something, then I need something like Fusion 360 to do it.
How is that even possible when, you know, the whole open source maker community is like, this is exactly what we should. It's just, I get a bit tired of it after a while.
Anyway. I really don't know. I want to go and talk to the guys at the Hack Lab. There's Open Day coming up next month, so I'm going to go and ask them what their advice would be for
bring a microphone.
Yeah. I might just do that, actually. They might be up for having a wee chat about those sorts of things and recording it. So see what I can do.
The Ramona builds a character on the edge of Empire. And this was a bit choppy, but he did an excellent job at rescuing audio. Anybody having a problem with the audio in here should remember the golden words, and I should read them. Verily, I say to thee, if it's audible, it's good enough. And this was audible.
Yeah.
But thing about this was, I am still missing a little bit about what the dice do. You know, I really think we need somebody, and I'm trying to line that up with Klaatu and Lost in Bronx to do an episode on, you know, completely novice, like no idea of what type of dice there are, where to actually start. But anyway, thanks, and sorry for the audio was so bad. I was forced to use Bluetooth headphones because Audacity would not take audio from my USB headset. Yep, nobody's going to slag you off for the audio because, anyway, any audio is better than no audio. That's what we're saying.
Yes, he did get there, so all power to him for that. Yeah, the dice business thing is something I don't fully understand. Yeah. As I've said before, my daughter's into it, and she's got a bag full of multi-sided 12, 20, whatever sided things made out of steel or whatever. Don't you drop them on my table? No, it's.
Why don't you record a show, Dave? Ken, don't you record a show, fella?
I keep trying to talk her into doing shows with me, but she's already busy.
Done one.
Yeah, she's done one. Yeah,
just turn off her Wi-Fi, and then you'll find that her attention will come back.
she claims she's got a degree to do this year. So
right, yeah.
Just excuses. I know. But to be fair, she did say maybe somebody'd be interested to hear what I've been doing in my dissertation for my degree.
Cool.
So she's been out in Canada watching hummingbirds for several weeks. So maybe that, I don't know. It's not really hackery, but there's interesting things to be heard there. Maybe we'll do that.
Kevin, again, with his Diffie-Hellman forward secrecy stuff. This one I'd heard about and was a bit familiar with it, but this one did actually help me clarify exactly why it's... and I like the way he dropped the perfect from forward suit. I like this. It's pretty good. Good show. Kevin chugs out these shows that we need, you know, without any fanfare whatsoever, and just go right there.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Sorry,
yeah,
Ahuka. Ahuka. Drop the
I think we know
big secret. Da, 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 da.
But no, it's real gems that we're getting from Ahuka, always some excellent stuff. So and there's a whole stack of them just sort of dropped into the future out there.
And we don't think anything of it. It's, you know, all of a sudden he gets an idea into his head to completely explain this entire thing, and he records them and he uploads them, and yeah, job done. Cool.
Yeah.
Okay, so what else have we got on the ticket there? Note to volunteers, comments marked in green were read in the last comment show and should be ignored in this one. Thanks, Dave.
Yeah. Well, of course. I mean, come on. What are you talking about?
Oh, you must really, really hate me. Oh, there you go. Anyways, the first comment was by myself on the roundtable show that was a disaster, and there hasn't been a roundtable since, obviously, because I ruined it for everybody. And this is a waveform site that describes how waveforms are put together. So when I find things related to this show, I put it back here as a comment onto them. Now,
cool.
Dave, Mr. X replied to a comment of you that you had on his show, Stuff I Bought at a Recent Amateur Radio Rally. And you had commented was, I envy the finds. And he says, or do you want to read that one out?
I'll read it. Yeah. He says, "Hi, Dave. I'm not surprised you didn't know about this, as there are not many amateur radio rallies held in these parts. I only know about it because I was a long time ago a member of the Kirkenzie and Port Seton Amateur Radio Club. This event is a mini radio rally. It originally went under the title of Junk Night, but has since gone up market. It's held at Kirkenzie and Port Seton Community Centre, usually around the beginning of August. I've been going there for a number of years, and our best bit about it is meeting up with old friends and sampling some of the homemade food. On the whole, I usually end up with very little. I just happen to be lucky this year." So that's great. So thank you, Mr. X. I never wrote back to say thanks, but it's Kirkenzie and Port Seton is sort of to the on the coast to the north of Edinburgh, so not very far away from where I live, 10-12 miles maybe.
Oh, nice. You should could be able to go.
Yeah, I'd certainly like to go and just snoop around at something like this just to see what's going on. Yeah, meet exactly. Mr. X one time maybe.
And comment to Quib News show Life Without Google, and it was by Draco Metallium, and if that isn't an awesome name, I don't know what is. "No more emails on my phone. Thanks. I had not realized that I really didn't need the Gmail app. Most of the time, it was just annoying. I am almost always in front of a computer, so I would have to find out about the new email a few seconds later. And for some reason, the spell checker doesn't work if you update it. You have just freed me and my RAM."
Yeah, nice comment. Yeah. That was interesting. Life without Google.
Indeed. And that brings us to the A Kind Awkward, which I'm going to read verbose, Dave, much to your embarrassment. Tlatu says, "I'd like to publicly thank Be Easy and Dave Morris for their amazing series on AUK. Too long, didn't read. I learned AUK from their HPR series and have used it every day this week. It has changed my life. Long version. I have to confess that I've had the O'Reilly Said and AUK book on my bookshelf for 5 years. In fact, it's one of maybe six books I brought with me from the US to New Zealand when I moved. Tried to read it several times, got basically nowhere. And yet, at least once a fortnight, see what he did there, I encounter some situation that would make me think, I bet this would be really easy with AUK. I should really learn AUK. Still, no dice. This has gone on for at least 5 years. On Monday of this week, however, I had to write a vitally important script for work. I knew the script was a perfect case for AUK. So I downloaded the AUK series, followed along, and by the end of the day, I'd written my script. And yesterday, I wrote a conversion script for some RPG resources I had lying around for the past year, waiting for manual conversion to DocBook. I've been using AUK every day this week and don't see myself putting it aside ever. Thanks for your series, guys. It's improved my Linux experience, which I was pretty sure had already reached a pinnacle. Nope. It just keeps getting better. I owe all to HPR. Cue the outro." Now, Dave, that is what makes you get up in the morning, huh?
Well, that absolutely made my year. Or at least, yes, if not my whole time with HPR.
Shout out to Be Easy as well. Absolutely awesome series. Absolutely. I've said it before and I'll say it again. It's an awesome series.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm so glad that we've managed to convey stuff that's useful to people, and long may it continue. And we're episode 10 is currently in the queue, so there's more. In fact, it's a big subject. We could be going on with this for a while yet.
Absolutely, so, but you know, we're learning lots as we go along. So keep on coming.
Yeah, we'll keep going for as long as we possibly can. I know it would be easy thinking about episode 11 at the moment, he was telling me. So we're not fast. We started off quicker than we are now, but we're trying to keep it just chugging along, you know. So because we have lives as well.
Yeah, exactly. So I sent a mail to the list about a time capsule countdown electronics project for a school. So I was asking for help from my brother-in-law, who was doing a He's an art teacher at a school and was doing it, wanted to do a time capsule containing 12 years of stuff belonging to the kids. Now, as it turns out, he didn't have the time to do any of this because it very quickly became apparent that that finding a power supply that would last for 12 years was a bit of a thing. A lot of the conversation actually happened directly off the list, and some people sent me very good links. And I've contacted the companies. James sent me a link for 20-year batteries, and I've contacted them asking them in general if they want to come on and do a show describing these batteries and how they keep them going for 10 years for like meter readings and whatsoever, because it turns out your normal batteries will disappear after 2 years, so not very good use. We'll see how that goes, but I really think it's a cool project. He says regardless he will it might be something they'll do somewhere else at another school at a later date. So yeah,
it's a great project. I'd be fascinated to hear more about it.
Yeah, it seems like one, if you're really into dragging the most power out of something, how would you achieve it? I mean, if you had a regular power supply, what it's doing is not going to be that fantastically difficult. You know, power on an Arduino and display a page of text saying what the day is, what the countdown's going to be, and you know, a message for the day from somebody. You know, would be a cool thing. But how to get 12 years of or possibly even longer of power out of that thing? Very cool to set yourself that goal. We'll see. Do you want to read Dave's one, Dave?
Yes, this is from Dave Lee at the Love Bug, and he says, this is merely a suggestion, but one that affects me directly. Could we have a phonetic version of the host's given name available within our host profile? My given name in HPR is The Love Bug, pronounced The Love Bug, but eSpeak pronounce it as The Love Bug. It's the most spectacular mangling. This is me speaking here, which isn't quite read at all as intended. I've noticed that there are other hosts whose given name gets totally put through the mincer by eSpeak, not naming names, but a certain Northwest England correspondent whose given name is almost a sentence. Anyway, is there enough demand to request that a change is made, or is this simply a case of suck it up, Dave? So yeah,
suck it up, Dave.
We should do that with eSpeak, with no spaces in it, and then that would be great. But...
yes, so we could do that. We could do phonetics, but then again, yeah, it's another field in the database,
I did experiment with this briefly because I was giggling over it with my kids in the room, and they said, "What is it, Dad? What is it?" And I told them what it was. And then showed how if you put spaces in between the love bug, then it says it really well. So, you know, and NY Bill doesn't come out as any Bill anymore and stuff like that.
A mirror shade.
That's not just a case of spaces, I think. But the sensible answer is that one could have a database field with this in that was read by eSpeak, and then you could not in the current database perhaps, but
we could do that. There's no problem, but it's doable. But you have to understand that the reason you read the host names, Dave, is because I butcher them anyway, even if they're written properly. So I don't mind facilitating this technically, but even if we did do this, the phonetic strings that I would come up with for eSpeak to speak them would also be wrong.
Yes, it needs to be crowdsourced or sourced by the owner of the name, or more to the point, I guess. So yeah, but it, technically it should be pretty simple. I personally think we should do this.
Yeah, or and the other alternative is that we take the person's name as an audio file. Because we have that, So that's another way of doing it.
But that's also a nice idea, though.
That is also, I have a lot of them, which is so it would be like, today's show is by, hello HPR, my name is Bob.
A lot of editing will be involved there. So yeah, maybe the phonetics might be better.
Just getting eSpeak to do it right would be fun. Yeah, yeah. I mean, I discovered you could say the love bug with a northern accent if you did put the right parameters to eSpeak. So you know, you could. There's a lot of flexibility.
To do that, Dave. We're not going to do that. Although now, every time I've dropped Docs on the love bug again. But anyway, we could have a different phonetic spelling for the host.
That'll show him.
Okay, and then we had the HBR community news. What was the any other business, Dave?
Hang on, changing gear here. So really, it was just to say there were three new series, but we've already really covered them, but they're in the notes for future reference. The other thing was my usual spiel about tags and summaries. Windigo was very kind to send in some updates in the past month, and I spent a bit of time fiddling around with the thing and added some more. So we've managed to achieve a record of adding 40 more missing tags and or summaries.
Wow,
to shows in the past month. So
pretty good.
And the other thing was that the summary page has been smartened up a bit as well. The one where you can go and look for things that need work. And there's a list of all the tags at the end. I mentioned that last month, but I added an index to it. And in discussion with Windigo, he suggested using some CSS to turn it into columns, which I followed up and did. So it just looks slightly prettier, and it's easier to find things if you're thinking of adding a tag. You can go and see if it's been used already and in what context if you want to. So
cool.
There we go.
All right. That's it, Dave. Thank you very much for joining, and apologies to anybody who's going to be waiting in an hour for this show, but I'm really just so tired I need to go to bed. And yeah. Tune in tomorrow for another exciting episode of
Hacker
Public Radio. Join us now and share the software. You'll be free, hackers. You'll be free.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HBR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club and is part of the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license.